Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vanadwari Yasoda Nannam Nam Braja Jana Ram Janna Jamunate Ramanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vanadwari Yasoda Nandam Braja Janna Randam Yasoda Nandam Braja Janna Randam Jamuna Kira Vanakari All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Lord of Sages, Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, seventh chapter, text number 23, on this cold end of December morning. Asmat prasada samukha kalaya kalesha. Ishvaku vamsa avitirya guru nideshe.
Ishvaku vamsa avitirya guru nideshe.
Tishtan vanam sadaitan nuja avivesha. Yasmin viruda dasakam dara artim archat. Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha.
Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha.
Ishvaku vamsa avitirya guru nideshe.
Ishvaku vamsa avitirya guru nideshe.
Tishtan vanamsa dahitan nuja avisesha. Yasmin viruda dasakandara artim archat.
Yasmin viruda dasakandara artim archat.
Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha.
Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha.
Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha. Ishvaku vamsa avitirya guru nideshe.
Ishvaku vamsa avitirya guru nideshe.
Tishtan vanamsa dahitanuja avivesha.
Tishtan vanamsa dahitanuja avivesha.
Yasmin viruda dasakandara artim archat.
Asmat. Unto us, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant. Prasada. Causeless mercy. Sumukha. So inclined. Kalaya. With his plenary extensions. Kalesha. The Lord of all potencies. Ishvaku. Maharaj Ishvaku in the dynasty of the sun. Vamsi. Family. Avatirya. By descending in. Guru. Of the father or spiritual master. Nideshe. Under the order of. Tishtan. Being situated in. Vanam. In the forest. Sa Dayita Anuja. Along with his wife and younger brother. Avivesha. Entered. Yasmin. Unto whom? Virudya. Being rebellious. Dasa Kandara. Ravana, who had 10 heads. Artim. Great distress. Archa. Achieved. Translation. Due to his causeless mercy upon all living entities within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his plenary extensions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Ishvaku as the Lord of his internal potency Sita. Under the order of his father, Maharaj Dasaratha, he entered the forest and lived there for a considerable number of years with his wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him and was thus ultimately vanquished. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Ram is the supreme personality of Godhead, and his brothers, namely Bharat, Lakshman, and Satrughna, are his plenary expansions. All four brothers are Vishnu Tattva and were never ordinary human beings. There are many unscrupulous and ignorant commentators on Ramayana who present the younger brothers of Lord Ram as ordinary living entities. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the most authentic scripture on the science of God, it is clearly stated that his brothers were plenary expansions. Originally, Lord Ramchandra is the incarnation of Vasudeva, Lakshman, the incarnation of Sankarshan, Bharat, the incarnation of Pradyumna, and Satrughna, the incarnation. The incarnation of Aniruddha, all expansions of the personality of Godhead. Lakshmiji Sita is the internal potency of the Lord and is neither an ordinary woman nor the external potency incarnation of Durga. Durga is the external potency of the Lord, and she is associated with the Lord Shiva. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, 7th verse, the Lord appears when there are discrepancies in the discharge of factual religion. Lord Ramchandra also appeared under the same circumstances, accompanied by his brothers, who were expansions of the Lord's internal potency, and by Lakshmiji Sita Devi. Lord Ramchandra was ordered by his father, Maharaj Dasarath, to leave home for the forest under awkward circumstances, and the Lord, as the ideal son of his father, carried out the order, even on the occasion of his being declared the king of Ayodhya. One of his younger brothers, Lakshmanji, desired to go with him, and so also his eternal wife, Sitaji, desired to go with him. The Lord agreed to both of them, and all together they entered the Dandakaranya forest to live there for 14 years. During their stay in the forest, there was some quarrel between Ramchandra and Ravana, and the latter kidnapped the Lord's wife, Sita. The quarrel ended in the vanquishing of the greatly powerful Ravana along with all his kingdom and family. Sita is Lakshmiji, or the goddess of fortune, but she is never to be enjoyed by any living entity. She is meant to be worshipped by the living being along with her husband, Sri Ramchandra. A materialistic man like Ravana does not understand this great truth, but on the contrary, he wants to snatch Sita Devi from the custody of Ram and thus incurs great miseries. The materialists, who are after opulence and material prosperity, may take lessons from the Ramayana that the potency of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Lord is the policy of Ravana. Ravana was very advanced materially, so much so that he turned his kingdom, Lanka, into pure gold or full material wealth. But because he did not recognize the supremacy of Lord Ramchandra and defied him by stealing his wife, Sita, Ravana was killed and all his potency, all his opulence and power were destroyed. Lord Ramchandra is a full incarnation with six opulences in full, and he is therefore mentioned in this verse as Kalesha, our master of all opulences. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Nananjana Shilakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yenatasmai Sri Guru Vinamaha Bhukam Karoti Vachanam Bhandum Lam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitarine Vancha Kapa Tudubhyastra Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Wednesday, and usually worship Wednesday when all the children from the school come. Of course, the school's out for holidays right now. And I was thinking, very unfortunate they're not here. There are two subjects in here pertinent to them. One is the initial subject of listening to what the Father says. And the other is the description of Ravana having 10 heads. Every kid likes the idea of a big monster with lots of heads. So unfortunately, they're not here, so we'll just talk amongst the adults. Earlier in this chapter, Srila Prabhupada has pointed out the significance of these particular chapters of the Bhagavatam that speak about the Lord's various incarnations and the manner in which to authenticate the bona fide incarnation and those who simply pose themselves as such, and how to tell the difference. And we've spoken to this point previously, so I won't expand on that here very much. Yet, here again in this verse in the Sanskrit, there is a word indicating this, and that word is avatirya, by descending. The Lord's incarnations, they all descend from the spiritual world, not ascending from this material realm. This is the way that we perceive spiritual knowledge as well. That it's descending to us. That even from our earliest days as practicing Krishna consciousness, this is one of the first things we knew. This isn't a new idea to us. This is something we learned very early on, that the spiritual knowledge descends. This isn't really a new idea. Even in mundane fields, any type of knowledge is going to be acquired has to come from a source that has that knowledge already, from a higher source, from a descending process. But these Kali Yuga days that we live in, everything is a hodgepodge practice. Everybody wants to follow their own way. Or for some of us of a certain age, the Isley brothers nailed it when they said, it's your thing, do what you want to do. So this is the mentality of the materialist, particularly in the age of Kali Yuga. Just do whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter. Everything's all right. Everything's equal. Everything's acceptable standards, whatever. And this captures the mood of Kali Yuga. But this isn't the mood of spiritual topics. Expanding on this word, avatarya, is the notation of Lord Ram's father and greater family line that he comes in, Ishvaku Vamsi. And this indicates the history that he's coming from, the father, the grandfather, like this. And then also, his wife and brothers, they're indicated by the word Sa Daitya Anuja. So here we have a full description, as Prabhupada mentions earlier in this chapter, who the Lord's name will be, where he appears, what his activities will be, what his family line is. And that's the other thing here, that the actions he will take, Dasa Kandara Artini, putting the ten-headed Ravana in great distress. That's an understatement, to say the least. But all of these things add up to what we would call in our modern times a good background check. Someone comes in to apply for a job in your company, or someone wants to take out a loan from a bank, or someone wants to apply to a government or a military or police position, background checks are done. Who is this person? I remember when I applied for my private investigator license here in the state of Florida some years ago, they did a background check on me and they found that I had an outstanding warrant for my arrest, which quite shocked me. I had no idea. And so we did a little investigation. It turned out that in 1971, prior to becoming a devotee, I had been arrested in Florida. In Texas, in the panhandle. I was hitchhiking across the country, and this group of young men, I'll use the term loosely, picked me up, and they gave me a ride. They were stealing gas from hotel-parked cars to make their way across whatever their journey was. And so that evening, we pulled into the parking lot to... They pulled into the parking lot to do their business. And pretty soon after leaving that parking lot, the world-famous Texas Rangers... Well, these foolish young men decided it was a good idea to try to outrun the Texas Rangers in their car or whatever, and were promptly pulled over. We were all taken out of the car, and it was explained to the officers, look, this guy, we just picked him up. He's got nothing to do with anything. You can let him go. And the officer was like, nah, you're all in the same car, you're going to jail. So at any rate, my father ended up bailing me out some days later. I think I spent 3 days in jail. And the money that he paid for the bail was apparently, as it turned out, pocketed by somebody, and the case was never settled. And I went on my merry way for decades until I applied for something. And a background check to see if I was really worthy of this position I was applying for came up. Anyway, it was settled. I contacted that sheriff's office, and they said, oh, my God, this is so old. We have to go into the back room and pull out all the old ledgers and look this up. And they saw what it was and that somebody had not finished the case, so they dismissed it from the records, and I was good, and I got my license. So at any rate, the whole point of that story is that a background check, just for a common thing, is there. What to speak of an incarnation of the Lord? Let's see your credentials, please. As I mentioned in the last class, that... man in Vrindavan, not too far from the Krishna Balaram temple, that proclaims himself to be an incarnation of Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu, that he is the new Mahaprabhu. So, okay, credentials, please. Where is your mother, Sachi? Where is your Jagannath Mishra father? Where is your Mahaprakash Leela? Where you're showing all the incarnations? Oh, okay, all right. So at any rate, this is an important factor when we discuss this. Now, Prabhupada notes in a lecture in 1972 in Los Angeles on the third chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where the incarnations are listed as expansions of Krishna, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna has two businesses when he descends. This is something we're all familiar with. Number one, to kill the miscreants. And number two, to protect the devotees. Now, many times, the Lord comes in a manner that is not necessarily a full recognition of his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Many times he comes playing a role. Vamana is such an incarnation. He didn't appear full on, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, here I am. No, he came as a little dwarf Brahmin. Ramchandra here is another one. Ramchandra didn't come on as the full potency personality of Godhead. Oh, I am the son of Dasarath Maharaj. I have to do what he asked me, like this, which in a whole other story was a source of aggravation to Lakshman, which caused his appearances in Inanna, but that's a different story. At any rate, so he ultimately acted as the Lord in those pastimes, but in his initial role did not, just as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu keeps his identity as the personality of Godhead hidden, except to a very select few. This was the function of Mahaprakash Lila, of Mahaprabhu, at the home of Srivas Thakur. This was all done in secret at Srivas Sangam. This Mahaprakash Lila wasn't a full manifestation of his qualities as the personality of Godhead to the general populace. This is to a few select few. So in his lecture on this, Prabhupada expands on this by saying, so Lord Ramchandra appeared for the purpose of satisfying the Sura. Krishna appears for the protection of the Sura. There is Sura and Asura. Asura means non-devotee, and Sura means devotee. So for killing the Asura, Krishna does not require to come down any agent, and there are many. Parasya Shaktir Vividaya Shuryate. This is from the Sveta Upanishad. Simply by advising the king of heaven, Indra, you send a strong wind. So many asuras can be immediately annihilated. So for that purpose, Krishna does not come. He comes to satisfy the devotees. The devotees are so anxious to see him. It's always wonderful to listen to these lectures by Prabhupada, not only for the information Prabhupada gives, but for the tone of Prabhupada's voice, for the emphasis he gives to certain words, for the way he says things. So in each of these incarnations, there is an asura that is to be dealt with. Every one of them. If we look at any of the incarnations, they all come for the purpose of dealing with an asura, or in the case of like Matsya, multiple asuras. So, but this is not his only reason to come. Prabhupada makes this clear in numerous lectures. His main reason is stated in this verse here. Surya Kara Chirikshaya, for the purpose of pleasing the demigods. Demigods means the devotees. So the Lord's very, very kind to his devotees. And he doesn't want to see his devotees in any difficulty. This is his supreme compassion. Devotee emulates and embraces the qualities of the Lord to bring them into his own character, this compassion as well. So this is the Lord's mood. He doesn't want to see the devotees suffer. So to this end, when a devotee is bothered by the asuras, that devotee calls on the Lord. This is one of the purposes of the Purusha Shukta. Purusha Shukta is one of the five Shuktas we'll be chanting at the New Year's Eve Jaga. The demigods go to the ocean of milk, and they call the Lord to get his attention by chanting this prayer, which awakens him, draws his attention, and he comes to their aid. And he comes to their aid as only the Lord himself can do, incarnating differently according to the particular need. Each of the incarnations of the Lord in the Das Avatar are unique and wonderful and have a very specific purpose. Why would the Lord appear as a tortoise? Well, so that the Mandara mountain can be on his back and the churning can go on. Why would the Lord appear as Matsya? So that he can have his horn hooked onto the boat and save the Vedas. Why would the Lord appear as Vamana? So that he can surprise Bali with his expansion. And all of these different incarnations have a specific purpose. These are things that only the Lord himself can manifest out. Particular need, a particular circumstance, and a particular function. Time, place, and circumstance. These are the considerations that the Lord manifests when he makes an incarnation. Now, Prabhupada continues in that same lecture to speak to this point. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, Nrsimhadeva appeared not to kill his teeny father, Prabhupada uses this. Interesting word to describe Hiranyakasipu. It's not a word we regularly hear Hiranyakasipu described as, teeny Hiranyakasipu. No, Hiranyakasipu is a big, massive demon. But teeny Hiranyakasipu. To kill his teeny father, Prabhupada says it twice, to kill his teeny father, simply by directing Maya, he could be killed. But the Lord wanted to come before Prahlad Maharaj. You are such a nice devotee. You are suffering on my behalf. I have come. I will save you. You will see. So this is the purpose. By and by, to kill the atheist, keeping the promise of Lord Brahma intact. The demon, he took a benediction from Brahma that I shall not die in this way, in that way, in this way, in that way. So all the promises of Brahma were kept. And to do that, he appeared in such a form that would not clash with any of those promises Brahma gave. Therefore, he had to take the form of such a thing as Nrsimhadeva. And this does not clash with any of the promises made. Brahma was a devotee. He had given some benediction. So Krishna did not want to violate that benediction. He kept that promise of his devotee. Kuntiya patijanahi. Name bhakta pranasiti. Just see the kindness of Krishna. He kept Brahma's promise. He kept the atheist Hiranyakasipu's aspirations, and at the same time, he satisfied Prahlad. And everything was done simply by incarnating as Nrsimhadeva. I love the way Prabhupada says, simply by incarnating as Nrsimhadeva. Just a simple incarnation, half man, half lion, ferocious, tearing everything apart. Now, as a side note, there's another lecture where Prabhupada mentions how Nrsimhadeva actually chastised Brahma after this Leela with Hiranyakasipu and told him, don't give such benedictions again. It causes me so much inconvenience. I have to come up with some special incarnation just through these circumstances. So don't do this anymore. Anyway, Prabhupada addresses another point in this particular verse today as well. First of all, he points out that the Lord incarnates not alone, but with his expansions. Now we all know this, the Lord, we don't see the Lord alone. Even if Krishna is in the forest, at least there's some peacock, some cows, some parrots, some other associate. So these associates mentioned today, his brothers, Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna are more in order, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. And he addresses the point of how unscrupulous persons, he uses this word, unscrupulous, in an effort to minimize the Lord and to minimize his expansions, say that they're just ordinary persons. Ordinary persons? How is this even possible? They're all expansions of Lord Vishnu, namely Sankarsan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. These are described in detail in the Bhagavatam as the expansions of Lord Vishnu, his plenary portions, and full, all on and on and on like this. And in this way, the Lord does not come alone, but he brings all of his potency with him. It's like whenever we worship the Lord, we worship him with some potency. Now, in the third paragraph of this purport, Prabhupada says, almost wryly, kind of in a very humorous, sarcastic kind of way, Lord Ramchandra was ordered by his father, Maharaj Dasarath, to leave home for the forest under awkward circumstances. Awkward circumstances is how Prabhupada describes this. So there's a lesson to be learned from this. Be careful of what you promise. Sometimes if you make a promise, it'll come back to haunt you in the future. So if you're going to promise something, of course you have to keep that promise. You have to keep that word. That's your vow is taken. But you have to be very thoughtful about what you're promising. And this is clearly the case with Maharaj Dasarath and his Queen Kaikeyi. Now her background's actually very interesting. If we take a quick overview with that of her life, we'll see how instrumental it is in the Leela of Lord Ram. Actually, at the time of her marriage, Kaikeyi's marriage to Maharaj Dasarath, her father promised her that your son will be king. This is why I'm marrying you to Maharaj Dasarath. Your son will become king. Now I'm sorry. So Dasarath accepted that promise. And he could accept it because at that time, Kushalya was with no children. She had not born any children yet. So Kaikeyi, she had a sister and seven brothers. But the mother, for some reason, was not present in the home. And there was no maternal influence, so to speak. But she was instead raised by her wet nurse, as we all know, Mantara. And Mantara, it was arranged, would accompany her to Ayodhya to be the dependable maidservant with her marriage to King Dasarath. So in this way, she had this... we all know that Prabhupada describes how when a girl would be married, particularly a princess, many Devi Dasis would go with her. So this Mantara went with her, like a mother figure, you know. So when there was a war that Maharaj Dasarath had to fight in, Kaikeyi persuaded Maharaj Dasarath to take her into the battle with him. And during that battle with this great demon, Samhasura, who was an enemy of both Indra and King Dasarath, the wheel to King Dasarath's chair became broken. We all know this story. And Samhasura's arrow pierced the armor of Maharaj Dasarath, and it lodged in his chest. Now, their armor was no small deal. Even from medieval times, we've seen in some museums or sometimes on documentaries or films, whatever, this type of armor during the medieval times they had, this chainmail that could really prevent any type of... The closer the chainmail was made, the greater likelihood to prevent arrows and lances and all from piercing it. So what to speak of the armor of Dasarath Maharaj? So somehow or another it was pierced, and this arrow lodged into his chest. Now, Kaikeyi, among her many qualities, she was a very, very courageous queen. Her Kshatriya line. And so she quickly got off the chair, repaired the broken wheel, and then got Dasarath Maharaj back into the chariot and drove the chariot off the battlefield and nursed him back to health. Removed the arrow. You know, you see this, and they pull the arrow out. Ah! You can just imagine how painful it is to have an arrow pierce into you. Well, I got news for you. It's a lot more painful coming out because you've got the jagged edge backwards, and now it's going to tear all that flesh out. These are the Kshatriyas. They live through such things. So at any rate, she removed it, and then, you know, very much healed him, nursed him back. And so Dasarath Maharaj is very touched by this service of the queen. And he said, I'll give you benedictions, two boons that you can take from me. And she very thoughtfully said, all right, I'll take those later. Right now we're in the field of battle. I'll just put them into my pocket. You know, we'll deal with that later. So quite a long time passes, of course. And then all three queens of Maharaj Dasarath give birth. Now, Prabhupada, interestingly enough, in different places says three queens or two queens. I just heard a lecture the other day. He said two queens, and the Bhagavatam is three queens. At any rate, multiple queens. They all gave birth. And Ramchandra was the son of Kushalya, as we know, and Dasarath Maharaj's favorite son. So when he turned 16, he was to be crowned as the prince. I mean, as the king. So, of course, we know the story. Mantara was very anxious that Kaikeyi would lose her status as the chief queen in the court. Because, you know, I mean, after being nursed back to health, saved on the battlefield, she's pretty much, you know, Dasarath's favorite. You know, and of course, you know, you've seen it sometimes. Well, I'm going to do something. If you didn't forget the time I saved you on the battlefield, did you? All right, you can do. You know, a wife has the ability to kind of do these kind of things. And, you know, so at any rate, she figured, Mantara did, that if Ram ascended to the throne, that would make Kushalya the queen mother, and then Kaikeyi would have a less important position. So, of course, you know, she instigated so many problems. And there was some dormant jealousy already in Kaikeyi's heart, it explains. And Mantara exploited that and reminded her that your son is supposed to be the king. Remember the promise? So, you know, how can Kushalya's son, you know, like this? So anyway, this animosity was fueled there by Mantara. And so in this way, Kaikeyi brought forth her demands, the two boons that she had in her pocket. You know, I'm presenting my chit, you know. You have that piece of paper and like, okay, here. My get out of jail card free, for those of us that are familiar with Monopoly. You know, some of us grew up playing Monopoly. Actually, when I was a young boy, we used to have Monopoly marathons. During the summer, we would play for, you know, 18, 24 hours in a row and just rotate it around the clock. So at any rate, she pulled her get out of jail card free, you know, and got those boons. Of course, we know the one boon was that Bharat, her son, would be put on the throne. And the second boon, of course, you know, was that Ram would be exiled for 14 years. Dasarath had no choice but to grant these. He was a Kshatriya. The word of a Kshatriya is his potency. It's law. What to speak of, he was a great devotee, and a devotee never goes back on their word. So in this way, he had to do this. Ram went to exile, and Dasarath was grief-stricken, and very shortly after that, he left this world. So this is the awkward circumstances Prabhupada hints to here. Now, moreover, Bharat was very, very loyal to Ram. He wasn't, you know, a brother just looking for a chance to, you know, get rid of the other brother and take his position. You know, many times we see in the history of the world where there's siblings, you know, there's an arrangement just waiting for one to get out of the way or to even murder one to get out of the way. We all these types of exploits are there in our world history. Bharat was not of this character. After all, he was an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, directly from Lord Vishnu. So he swore, I will not ascend the throne. I will serve as the king in separation of Lord Ram. To the point to where this defeated Kaikeyi's desire that her son would be king. So her whole arrangement for this, calling her boons in this manner and having everybody exploited and ruining the whole thing, didn't even get to bear the fruit because Bharat refused to take up that position. Many brothers would have seized the chance, as I say, but he did not. Instead, he took the shoes of Ramchandra and he placed them on the throne and worshipped those shoes, ruled on behalf of the servant of those shoes of Ramchandra, and he lived in a separate place. He didn't even live in the kingdom palace where the throne was. And he ruled only as the servant. This is one place where we see the potency of worshiping the shoes of the personality of Godhead. Sometimes in our deity worship, you'll have a deity form that can't really be bathed properly with water, so the shoes can then be worshiped. Like if you have Jagannath, for instance, you know, wooden form you can't pour water on, you might take the shoes. Of course, another way of worshiping Jagannath, you put a mirror in front of them, put that in the stand and bathe the mirror. Different ways like that. So anyway, this was Bharat's mood. This was his emphasis. Now, in another bit of wry statements, Prabhupada says, during their stay in the forest, there was some quarrel between Ramchandra and Ravana, and the latter kidnapped the Lord's wife, Sita. The quarrel ended in the vanquishing of the greatly powerful Ravana along with his kingdom and family. Some quarrel. Sometimes among siblings, or maybe among co-workers, you have a quarrel. I remember a particular quarrel I've mentioned a few times that I had as a brahmachari with a young, as a young devotee with another brahmachari, some little quarrel we had and how that was resolved, you know. We generally think of the exchange, the relationship between Ram and Ravana as a bit more than a quarrel. A little bit more than just a quarrel. We're talking a full-out war here. But at any rate, it brought about the end of Ravana by his overstepping his boundaries in regards to Sita. This is a very valuable lesson to everyone in controlling their senses, especially in regards to another man's wife. This is just such a practical point here. Ravana, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, Ravana thought he could enjoy Sita separate from the Lord. Sita is Lakshmiji. Prabhupada expands on this, and this is a purport. Sita is Lakshmiji, or the goddess of fortune, but she is never to be enjoyed by any living entity. She is meant for being worshipped by the living being, along with her husband, Lord Ramchandra. Very important instruction here. If you want to worship Lakshmi, she must be worshipped in conjunction with Vishnu, whatever particular incarnation. A materialistic man like Ravana does not understand this great truth, but on the contrary wants to snatch Sita from the custody of Ram and thus incurs great miseries. Miseries is an understatement for sure. Any time that we try to exploit the potency of the Lord, his enjoined potency, Sita Devi, Lakshmi Devi, Radharani, any time we endeavor in that manner, we can be guaranteed of difficulty ahead of us, because this is contrary to the rules of etiquette, to the rules of proper worship, proper behavior, proper respect. This is the only way that one worships Sita in connection. And this Prabhupada indicates as a great truth. If one is in a position managerially within the society of devotees and receives donations, these donations represent Lakshmiji being brought to the service of the Lord. If someone exploits those separately for their own enjoyment, great difficulty will come. There's no question. We've seen this so many times in our society. We shouldn't understand or think that these resources we have are there for my use. I will decide how this gets used. No, there's a system by which this is done, because this does not belong to the individual. It belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The materialists who are after opulence and material prosperity may take lessons from the Ramayana that the policy of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Lord is the policy of Ravana. We should be and tend to be very cautious as to how our name is associated, who our name is associated with, what activities our name are associated with. Sometimes we might do something that's a little embarrassing and we hope that nobody remembers it. And then you'll meet somebody and say, hey, I remember when you did such and such. Oh, cover your head. Hang your head. Yes, I did that once. Such an unfortunate thing I did, you know. So here, we do not want to be associated with this mentality of Ravana. And Prabhupada's very plain here, that this idea of thinking we can enjoy wealth separate from the Lord is the policy of Ravana. And if we look today, this is actually the nature of all the rulers of this world. So this is a very important thing that's worth noting. We cannot have the goddess of fortune without her eternal consort, Lord Vishnu. She's the most chaste of ladies and never allows herself to be separated from the Lord. This is the nature of a chaste wife. She always considers herself to be devoted to the husband. Prabhupada indicates here, though, materialistic man does not understand this and therefore they incur great miseries. Now, Prabhupada notes something here also. He kind of vaguely hints at this elsewhere, and that's as far as the golden kingdom of Ravana. Prabhupada states in one purport, in the fourth canto, 22nd chapter, verse 36, concerning this golden city of Ravana, Prabhupada says, in Brazil, huge quantities of gold have been found. And from historical references in the Puranas, we can guess quite safely that this was part of Ravana's kingdom. And that's the only place, that's why I say vaguely, there's no place else in any of Prabhupada's writings or speaking where he indicates like this. There's some connection with this. And there's been discussion and all, and a tunnel going through the earth and things of this nature. Prabhupada indicates here that this gold from Ravana's kingdom is coming from other places as well. So, but more to the point, graphically, it's described in the ninth canto, 10th chapter, verse 15, when the ocean personified is offering prayers to Ramchandra, having been negligent in coming forward. As we all know, when Ramchandra wanted to cross the ocean, he went and sat there at the ocean for 3 days in meditation, waiting for the personified ocean to come forward to give his permission. I mean, of course, Ramchandra didn't need anybody's permission to do anything, but this was his mood. And personified ocean did not come. And Lord Chandra, with very Agni Lochanaya, angry red eyes, glared out at the ocean. It mentions that all the different types of entities in the ocean, the sharks, the whales, and the crocodiles, it specifically says, were all very much disturbed by the heating of this water. Can you imagine how many degrees Fahrenheit that would have to be to heat the water of the ocean to where all the entities in the ocean became very uncomfortable? It was so hot. That'd be an interesting study. At any rate, so when these prayers, when the personified ocean finally came before Ram, he gave his full blessings and said the following, very, very specific and graphically insulting words. "Yes, my lord, go to the abode of Ravana, who is a great source of disturbance and crying for all the three worlds. He is the son of Vishrava, but he is to be condemned like urine. So please now go and kill him." To be condemned like urine. Sometimes as a young child who's beyond diaper stage, there might be some accident and the child wets the bed. This is very embarrassing for the child, but it has to be acknowledged to the mother because the sheets have to be changed, your pajamas have to be washed, everything has to be clean. But this is considered a very unfortunate act. What to speak of if sometimes, you know, if like some circumstance urine is spilled on someone, you know, even if you go to the doctor and you have to have a urine test, it's like everybody touches it like, you know, with gloves and set it in the window, we're not touching it and we'll take it away, and you know, like that. Because it's considered like this, you know. So this is the description given of Ravana, that he's condemned like urine. Now, it's interesting if we take a look here at Vishrava, his father. Vishrava actually was a very dutiful son of Pulastra Muni. Now, you all know Pulastra Muni from the Govardhan Leela. I was curious, I wanted to do a little more research, find out if this Govardhan Leela was before or after, but at any rate. So Pulastra Muni was the father of Vishrava. And Vishrava was a scholar par excellence. He had great powers from all the performance of tapasya he performed, which in turn earned him great fame and respect amongst all the other rishis. So he wasn't just some, you know, Kshatriya king just doing. No, he was a great rishi with great respect amongst all the others. So Bhadaraj was very impressed by the performance of his austerities and gave his daughter Ila Vidha to Vishvasha. Now, Ila Vidya bore a child called Kubera, who became, as we know, the treasurer of the demigods. He was a god of wealth. And his kingdom was granted by Lord Brahma as Lanka. Now, there was a Rakshasa at this time whose name was Sumali. And Sumali urged his daughter, Kishini, to seek out Vishrava for her husband. And he promised her that if you do so, your children will rival Kuvera. So Kishini finds Vishrasha, and he's performing some jaga, and told him of her father's wish, and at the conclusion of the jaga, benediction is given, dakshin, and so he accepted her as his child. But remember, Vishrara was a very, you know, great rishi. He had cognizant powers of Trikalagya. And he informed her that, you know, I'll marry you, but I'm going to tell you right up front, if we have children, they're going to be Rakshasas because of your nature. So she prostrated herself before him, begged to have the children, perform the marriage. So he agreed and he married her. And he said, the children we have will inherit your disposition, not mine. So accordingly, Kashini gives birth to the terrible Rakshasas, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and Surpanaka. And one virtuous Rakshasa who inherited the qualities of his fathers, Bibhishan. So these were central characters to the pastime of Lord Ramchandra. So Vishrava, as a dutiful father, he educated Ravana in all the practices of tapasya, yajna, and the Vedas, and we know that he was a very great scholar. And Ravana challenged Kuvera to take the kingdom of Lanka. Now, Kuvera was ready to fight for this kingdom. But Vishrava counseled Kuvera and said, look, your stepbrother's demand is going to be a great source of difficulty for you. Just avoid the conflict, concede it. Sometimes the greater part of valor is just concede. So Kuvera, obeying his father, retired to Mount Kailash, and Ravana took over the city of Lanka. So this is his manifested appearance there. So a concluding part in all of this pastime of Ram is the amazing manner in which Ram then proceeded to cross the ocean. The Prabhupada states that Hanuman flew across the ocean. And Ram could easily have done the same, but Ram considered himself a mere human and that he couldn't perform such a feat as Hanuman had done. Prabhupada mentions this in a lecture. So instead, he built a bridge. Saying he built a bridge is kind of, yeah, he built a bridge. Somebody built a bridge over that ravine there. He built a bridge, as Prabhupada says, with no support beams or pillars. So the manner in which this was done was his holy name was written on each of the stones. They were thrown and they floated on the ocean in this way. Just imagine the potency our heart would have if we could write the holy name in our heart and have it stay there. Very interesting thought. We could float above the ocean in this material world. So this is the process that we take up by surrendering to Sri Hari Nam. Additionally, we can see how easily we can compare the floating of these stones on the ocean to the lifting of Govardhan Hill. This lifting was also seen as a minor feat of the Lord, performed only for the pleasure and protection of his devotees. So these different pastimes we mentioned today, these are the way of the Lord in his multifarious incarnations and how he appears to save the devotees and diminish the asuras. So we'll finish there. Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak about the personality of Godhead and his pastimes. If there's any questions or comments, any corrections, chastisements.
Thank you for a wonderful class. You know, what was so surprising to Ramayana was Kaikeyi loved Ramachandra so much. And so her desire to make her son king was greater than her love for Lord Ramachandra.
Mm. Her desire was there from her very... you know, arrangement for the marriage. This was something she was promised. And so, yes, she was very attached to this. So we have to be very careful what we become attached to. You know, it overstepped everything else. Just as Ravana overstepped all considerations by kidnapping Sita's wife, even at that time, to take another's wife, this just wasn't done. Ravana was so uncontrolled in his senses. Similarly, Kaikeyi was so uncontrolled in her desires, it overstepped everything just to fulfill that desire. Yeah.
Prabhu, you mentioned how if one worships Narayan, Lakshmi,
is there. One worships Krishna, serves Krishna. Lakshmi is always there. Yet, it's also stated that the devotees of Krishna are often poverty-stricken, or as opposed to those of Lord Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you see a little... Can you resolve that contradiction, apparent contradiction?
Well, it doesn't say that worshipping Lakshmi means you're going to get Lakshmi. It just says that's the appropriate thing to do. It's not guaranteed that, okay, you worship Lakshmi, and therefore you're going to get all kinds of Lakshmi.
No, I don't mean if you worship Krishna,
right,
when Lakshmi is always there.
Right,
Lakshmi,
but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to come to your facility, your use.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, yes, you're right, that's devotees and known of Vishnu for being poverty-stricken and devotees. This was the great argument that was offered to many of the associates of Mahaprabhu, you know, that Kulavesha Sridhar. When Kulavesha Sridhar was so poverty-stricken, and so Mahaprabhu came and said, you should worship Devi like all of your neighbors are doing. They're all very wealthy. You're worshiping Supreme Lord Vishnu and you have nothing. So that argument is an old argument, but a very common one. Yeah.
There's a tunnel, I forget where it's mentioned, but a tunnel from Sri Lanka, they found it in India. It's from Sri Lanka going towards Brazil, and they go in so far, they went in so far, but then they stopped. And then in Brazil, they also found a tunnel going towards India, and if they went in there far, and then I forget where the source is, but they say that Ravana brought gold from Brazil to Sri Lanka.
Yeah, this is what Prabhupada indicates. He said, how does Prabhupada say? He said, we can safely assume. Yeah.
And
safely
then,
guess. That's
and
what
then Mahi Ravana was in Brazil also, right? Remember he tied up Ram and Lakshman.
Yeah, these things are concluded, but there doesn't appear to be any direct Shastric statement that these things are a fact. But they are safely concluded, as Prabhupada says. I think Manamati had a question. Unless it was asked. Unless it was answered. No.
You mentioned about promise, you know, the importance of promise. And this might be an awkward question, you don't need to answer, but I was just wondering that, you know...
What did I promise and forget to do?
No. You know, we make a promise, the promise we make is to chant 16 rounds, and a lot of times devotees are not able to keep that promise.
Mm.
And is it better, I mean, that the promise was taken, even if they're not able to keep it, so they're always thinking, or I guess sometimes they're thinking that I need to go back to my promise, or I can't do it, or whatever. Or is it better not to take the promise because, you have some thought on that?
Well, that's exactly what I have, is some thought. along with taking that promise comes the connection to the sampradaya, comes the connection to the mantra, comes the connection to Krishna. That connection is necessary. One may falter unintentionally or circumstantially in keeping those vows, but as long as one is serious in their intent, then their ability to return to those vows is not diminished. But to say, oh, you know, I may, when I mean, it's a common thing, for instance, it's a very common thing when a lady has kids that, you know, their rounds kind of get affected, say that. So to say, well, you know, I'm going to eventually have children, so I shouldn't get initiated, that would not be the proper vision of it, in my opinion. Better to say, okay, let me get initiated, let me have a solid foundation, let me raise these children and encourage them in the same manner, and then be able to return to this if I'm not able to keep it. Now, I mean, I know particularly one individual I'm associated with that never, during the time of raising, what is it, 2 or 3 children, missed a day of chanting around, which just simply amazes me, having watched so many children and families in the society over my last however many years. So, yeah, it's an individual thing, but better to have that connection than to forego the connection for the sake of, you know, some mistake that may or may not happen. Thought. Very important point there. Anyone else? I guess we'll finish then. Oh, Pundari Pogo?
What happened to the fridge? I was just wondering if there were still some rocks that had Ram's name.
Well, you know,
they wrote them in chalk.
That's an interesting discussion, because there appear to be some scientific studies that show that the water level has risen above, and that there's some indication of a bridge. You know, blah, 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 blah.
So if we go there, we can find some rocks with Ram's name on them, or?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're really fortunate, Govardhan will come to you, or Shalagram will come to you, so maybe, I see your hand, Gadagraj, give me just a second.
they have, go ahead.
They have
NASA photo of Ram.
That's what I just said.
And at the big sadhu melas, and at the big sadhu melas, they have pumice stones that they put in.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that seems to be the indication that these were some type of pumice stone, because that's their nature.
But there's no Ram's name there, and so I'm thinking whether they wrote Ram's name in chalk or something, and it erased and it sank.
All right. Enough with this. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.